Welcome to CryptoCast by Gunnar Cook, the leading industry podcast that brings together expert guests to discuss hot topics and useful advice for blockchain and crypto asset businesses. I am James Burney, and thank you for joining me today.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of CryptoCast. I'm James Burney, a partner in the financial services and fintech team at Gunnar Cook, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Kuchina Hanush, who is Managing Director of Business Development and Partnerships at Wintermute, a leading liquidity provider. Hi, Kuchina, it's great to have you on.
Hey, James. Thanks so much for having me today.
So just sort of start the ball rolling and get people familiar. Can you give a sort of background as to what Wintermute is and what Wintermute does for those who have yet to hear and are unfamiliar with Wintermute?
Yes, of course I will. So Wintermute is a leading global algorithmic liquidity provider. We are set up as a high-frequency trading firm for digital assets like cryptocurrencies. We trade 5 to 10 billion daily in terms of turnover. We cover 80-plus venues across CeFi and DeFi, so we have all proprietary infrastructure. And we trade around 250, 300 tokens on any given day. So in terms of where we see our mission is, you know, to create liquid and efficient markets on centralized and decentralized venues, and we're sitting in the middle of the ecosystem, we believe, so we have very good visibility of everything that's happening in the ecosystem. So we have three main business lines. One is supporting liquidity across CeFi, DeFi venues. We have OTC offering, where we help to execute large block sizes. We help and support liquidity for all the major players, including, you know, traditional TradFi names, institutional brokers, retail brokers, hedge funds, as well as crypto names. Natives, new banks, crypto funds, VCs, family offices, and even high net worth individuals. And then we also have a small VC arm, which is all proprietary capital. We invest, and that's the only way we express longer term view. Everything else we do is only for liquid tokens, where we trade in a delta neutral capacity. So we're a buyer to every seller and a seller to every buyer, essentially.
And interesting, you mentioned in that actually both kind of the more traditional players like hedge funds and those who are a bit kind of newer, like the crypto natives. And we're seeing quite a lot of friction in some ways between kind of more traditional finance and kind of newer Web3 ways of doing things. Is this something you're seeing as well? And do you think it's a question of kind of these two groups adapting towards each other? Or do you think kind of one is now dominating the mindset of what's going on in terms of what you're seeing at the moment?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say it's probably similar approach, but the different speed at which they operate, right? So quite often, you know, when I speak to my previous clients, and just, you know, for a quick introduction, I spent 15 years in traditional finance. I work for large banking institutions like UBS, Credit Suisse, State Street. I also work for high frequency trading firms. So I've been on the sell side, the buy side, and also working for a venue for a marketplace. So, you know, I do speak to a lot of the old colleagues who either have moved on or, you know, maybe still at the same institutions where they started. So for many of them, they're very, very curious, or they're, you know, want to have a lot of information. But quite often for them, it starts with the question is, how do we go about it so that the compliance and the legal teams have approvals? So, you know, when I worked at State Street, we would go through new business, new BPR, new business, our proposal review process. And that might take many, many months before the company gets comfortable. It's very much, you know, a consensus driven decision where they have to, any of those big firms have to decide, well, who do we partner with? Who do we trust? What about the infrastructure? How do we lay the groundwork so that we are comfortable building upwards, right? Where they're not worried about possibly a middle office specialist, you know, clicking a button and literally sending Ethereum into the thin air and never being able to claim it back, right? Whilst with crypto natives, what we're saying, they're quick to get into the space. They're more comfortable to understand probably, you know, or try different complex areas. Like they're more comfortable maybe doing self-custody. They're not necessarily looking for qualified custodian as a traditional firm would be. They're not necessarily looking for, you know, specific compliant framework. They're just comfortable trading with, say, our OTC desk like ourselves. We're FCA registered. We're very well capitalized. They have 1 billion balance sheet, and they can trade with us from the moment they onboard. And sometimes onboarding can take overnight if someone has everything prepared and the documentation in order. So I would say they're very quick to start working and just kind of learn by doing it, right? They also don't have restrictions on which tokens they can trade, right? You know, right now, we know we all welcome regulatory clarity. That's something that, you know, proverbial regulatory clarity that everyone talks about. But, you know, not even every token is approved, depending on even which jurisdiction you're sitting in. So I would say it's more the speed of setting things up and kind of being ready to get go.
I mean, as soon as you talk about speed and due diligence, I mean, I think that's always an interesting dynamic we're seeing at the moment, because I think speed sometimes means that not enough care and thought is always put into who people select with. Mm-hmm. For those who are kind of new to liquidity, because we've seen people from anything from like people want to launch a new token who may never have dealt with a liquidity provider before, to people who are used to it and industry used to it, for kind of the first timers who everything is a bit new for them at the moment.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice as to what they should look for in terms of understanding what's good and poor practice for the liquidity provider and kind of what the red flags are when dealing with them?
Yes and no. I guess I have to make a disclaimer, not financial advice, but I guess in terms of sensible approach would be doing the usual due diligence as you would do, you know, in TradFi. Like I don't believe in this kind of, you know, black or white approach that everything in TradFi is negative and, you know, crypto, we will rebuild our own revolutionary world. I feel like there is a convergence between the two, and that's where we, you know, there could be symbiotic relationships. So I think the old TradFi approach, trying to understand, do I know this firm? Do I know the founders? Do I know how long they've been in the market? So Wintermute has been in the market for now close to 8 years. Where are they incorporated? We incorporated in the UK, you know, fully taxpaying everything, you know, from the UK entity. So for us, you know, again, or is it an offshore entity and you don't really know where the offices are located, right? Then you think, well, can I give them, usually, again, when you provide liquidity specifically for projects, if you look at that aspect of our activity, obviously a lot of it is an uncollateralized lending. So when I'm lending someone uncollateralized loan, do I understand the creditworthiness of this counterparty? Have I seen their financials? Are they a very well capitalized firm, or do they just, you know, claim to be a liquidity provider? The next step would be, you know, it's literally top to bottom, right? The next one is, do they have the expertise? What about which are the projects they worked with? Can I get references? And we're always very happy to provide references. Do they work on a short-term contract, or are they happy to work on a, you know, 2 years, 3 years contract? That's always a good indication. We are happy to work on, you know, 36, even 48 months basis. But again, we try to be flexible. The next one would be as well, do they have their expertise, right? Either do they have the capital, because capitalization is important, i.e. can they commit their own capital so that the incentives are aligned? They want the project to do well. And we obviously, you know, as their liquidity provider, also want to have long-term partnerships with aligned incentives. And that's why we are happy to commit the capital we have. As I mentioned, we have 1 billion plus balance sheet. And then the latest one is, I think sometimes people get misled by, you know, white glove service and, you know, having your... having their coverage. But, you know, quite often it's not necessarily about, you know, the classic wine and dine relationship, but more about what can they deliver? Can they deliver transparency? Is there, you know, availability of people on 24/7 basis to provide me color, to provide me support, to provide full reporting, including everything they're doing with the loan that is being allocated? So I think that approach is always a good way to understand who you're working with. And then I think we've worked with some very, you know, high tier, or, you know, with the biggest tier one projects in the past. They have 100 plus different partnership with all of their biggest projects. So, you know, again, it's not just a reference, but also, you know, the proof of their value we add is that a lot of those relationships, a lot of those contracts get extended, you know, and there's, you know, longevity in that partnership. And most importantly, trust. Do I trust that counterparty? It's similar to, you know, when you decide which bank to to bank with, right? And do you trust them to put your, you know, your money with? This kind of, do they have the functionality I need? But also, do I trust them from a creditworthiness perspective? I think that's what many may have a myth. And additionally, because it's not regulated sort of area, there's a lot of different misnomers that people tend to use. You know, they claim to be a market maker when they're not, they have very tiny balance sheet, or, you know, they might engage in something that would be clearly illicit in traditional finance, i.e., you know, pump and dump schemes, or doing you know, some sort of wash trading just to increase the volumes, the price. So again, if someone is making those claims, you should always question yourself, do I really want to be involved and partnered with someone who is clearly crossing the line? So I would say from a compliance perspective and legal perspective, those are very, very important aspects to consider.
And it's interesting also, just lastly, which is mm-hmm. one of the things you mentioned is the fact you're currently, this kind of activity is generally not regulated. And one of the things we're seeing globally at the moment is quite a lot of people are evolving their regulatory frameworks to the Web3 industry generally. Mm-hmm. In terms of kind of the future for liquidity providers operating crypto, do you think Do you think it's going to change either from a legal and regulatory perspective or alternatively just in terms of the kind of the market? Do you think we are where we are, it's not going to change? Or do you think that actually the future for liquidity providers is going to be different in the future?
That's, you know, a $1 trillion question, right? I guess it depends what the regulators will define as what do they think of generally of crypto tokens, right? Because again, you know, I come from FX and precious metals background, and you know, as we know, FX, I think, is now currently the turnover is around 7.7 trillion per day. It's huge, right? Spot is not a regulated market. Or, you know, there obviously have to be regulated for all other activities, i.e., you know, derivatives on the spot or derivatives on the FX, you know, providing CFDs to you, you know, your retail client base. But generally, spot is not regulated. You know, you can just have sort of either an API agreement or an OTC agreement, but obviously between all of the largest banks, there's, you know, ISDAs in place and many, many other complex documentation. If the regulator, and that's why regulatory clarity are very much welcomed by us. You know, we welcome the regulation. We think it would create the necessary framework to understand how you can completely, clearly, transparently operate in the market. Generally, you do need, you know, again, if you look at the securities and derivatives space, and obviously market making is a regulated activity. So, you know, where there are very specific requirements in order to meet the obligations to conduct that activity. So I think if that was the case, and if that's the route that regulators will take, it probably, there might be a very big gap for a very long time. And maybe that's why they're not so quick to make those decisions, because all of the TradFi firms are not really able to very quickly jump on the crypto wagon. And what I mean by that is there's no real prem broker available in the space who will be able to create the credit limits, who will be able to support the infrastructure, who will be able to have the same sort of, you know, solid, efficient, clear process on how you can trade, access the market, as well as hedge in the market. So that's why crypto native firms like ourselves with the TradFi DNA are instrumental. As I mentioned, we sit in the middle of the ecosystem, and we welcome our, you know, that conversation and the dialogue to help us be our, you know, provide liquid, transparent, efficient markets. That's what we want. You know, we want to be providing our liquidity where people can effectively trade any size, anytime they want, without the slippage, without market impact, without market signal. And this is essentially what, you know, good liquidity providers should do, not just, you know, provide liquidity at top of the book, but full depths of the book. Not to go into the debris, but, you know, essentially, I think the regulators need to make that decision at some point, because I know a lot of firms who are very uncomfortable with this lack of clarity right now, and their eyes are kind of completely withdrawn from the activities we've seen last year, for instance, Jump and Jane Street, or they possibly kind of create offshore vehicles, you know, where they're supported, but it's not really clear what they can and can't do. So I think right now it's quite, liquidity can be really fragmented. There's not many players who can support outside of, you know, top 10, top 20, and that's why people quite often come to us and say, hey, you're FC registered, you're as good as it gets, you have 8 years of experience, can you help us? And then we define what is a framework where we can help them, so that the legal counselors are happy, and we can provide the liquidity they require across all the venues where we trade.
I think that's very interesting. I think, I think the onshore offshore debate is going to go on for at least a few more years, and assume it all ends up. I'm afraid that's all we've got time for today. If anyone listening would like to reach out to Katrina, her email is Katrina, that's katrina.hanush at wintermute.com. Thanks for coming on, Katrina. It's been fantastic and very interesting.
Thank you so much, James. Much appreciated.
Thank you for listening to CryptoCast by Gunnar Cook. Gunnar Cook is a market-leading law firm advising on blockchain, Web3, crypto assets, and DeFi. Our members have been heavily involved in helping to shape the legal and regulatory framework for blockchain and crypto assets. Our team works across multiple jurisdictions, including Germany and the US. We are the only UK law firm to officially accept payments in crypto. Our client base is more than 150. Before we go, if you enjoyed the episode, please leave a review on your podcast service, and make sure you're following Gunnar Cook on social media and sign up to our CryptoCast mailing list on the Gunnar Cook website. Thank you for listening.